No one's immune. Suicide affects every walk of life. It doesn't matter the demographic. It doesn't matter their socioeconomic status, race, gender, religion. It happens to all kinds of people.
I've had countless people come up to tell me she was gorgeous, a gorgeous young girl. And they have to think, mental illness doesn't care if you're beautiful. It doesn't care if you're talented. You could be the most attractive person in the world and in your brain feel completely inadequate, and your brain is telling you the exact opposite. So it's important for people to see this picture, and they hear the term depression or anxiety or suicide, and they're already painting a picture in their mind of how this person might look. Extremely sad and run down and disheveled, when this picture shows none of that, and she still suffered daily.
People are overwhelmed by the thought of mental health issues and generally don't have the skill set or the knowledge to help someone with a mental health concern. And so oftentimes we don't talk about it or we don't ask about it because we're not sure what to do. And so education and information, like the program we're putting together here, is really important so that we demystify that and help people understand that. I think the other thing is that people think that mental health conditions happen and there's nothing we can do about it. But in fact, they're preventable with early intervention, they're treatable with high rates of success, and they're manageable and people recover from them over the course of a lifetime. And so these are things that people don't necessarily know. And I think if more people understood that, they'd be less afraid of talking about their own mental health or emotional distress.
There are lots of signs of suicide. In fact, one of the most common is just seeing a sad mood or a change in mood. For youth, you might see irritability, people starting to withdraw or isolate, but especially talking about suicide. If an individual is talking about suicide, then they're very serious, and it's to be taken seriously. Some people say, well, if they're talking about it, they're not going to do it. It's still meant to be taken very seriously. Other signs could be, as I mentioned, isolation, withdrawal, agitation, increased use of substances, irritability, depression. Those are the most common signs.
We hear a lot that it is critical to ask direct questions to young people about suicide risk, but we have to acknowledge that it's a challenging thing to do, to bring up the topic of suicide, or to think that a young person may be in such distress that life might not be worth living. So we need to recognize inside that it's okay to be anxious. It's okay to feel uncomfortable around this topic because it's an uncomfortable topic. When we see warning signs, when our intuition is that things are different and that the young person is struggling more than usual, we want to remain calm, take a deep breath, acknowledge our own discomfort, and then be patient and start to explore the other person's emotional experience.
I think people feel like they have to have a special skill set to help someone feel better. And if a person is experiencing something that is rising to the level of diagnosis, yes, they need access to a medical professional, a counselor, a therapist who can help them move through that diagnosis and manage their recovery. But on a day-to-day basis, to support their recovery or to help any of us who don't have something diagnosable, just a friendliness, a hello, an encouragement of people to come out of themselves and connect to other people is really important. So, you know, when we talked about the Strive for Five campaign, thinking about it in terms of just making a phone call like we would when we weren't all stressed out and saying, hi, how are you? How are the kids? Have you read a good book? What's your garden like? You know, any of the conversations we'd normally have, those are just simple things we can do that lift our spirit and lift the spirit of the other person we're talking to.
Again, it happens to 1 in 5 individuals. The more we talk about it, the more we understand that it is just like, as you said, other illnesses and diseases that people, we don't ask for them. Nobody asks for diabetes or schizophrenia or chronic depression. it is something that happens, and there are ways to address it, whether it's through therapy, whether it's through medication, or a combination thereof.
So there's a real temptation to jump right in and solve the problem. We, as adults that care about kids, we don't like to see kids struggling, so we want to fix it. That's our typical instinct. But what we know works is actually sitting with the pain and not attempting to fix everything immediately. What a young person needs in that moment of a suicidal crisis is for someone to be present with them, to come alongside them, and share their pain to help carry that burden a little bit. And I've seen that work incredibly well when trusted adults will acknowledge that the young person is hurting, that they will not indicate that they can fix it all immediately, that they will listen and get them to the right individuals or the right situations that will help navigate that pain moving forward. That's really one of the best things you can do.
I think a lot of us are afraid that we might offend someone or bring up an issue that they hadn't thought about and put something in someone's head that they hadn't considered. But the fact is that's not true. When someone's experiencing physical pain, we help them. When someone's experiencing emotional pain, reaching out, asking, and giving them that opportunity for discussion and maybe to reach out for help is a really vital part of accepting them as who they are and recognizing this as an illness, not a personal failing.
So when you're approaching that topic, you want to be very direct. You want to state the specific changes that you've seen. So I noticed that you haven't been playing soccer with your friends like you usually do. I noticed that you haven't been reading at all, or that you haven't spent any time eating the foods that you like, or spending time with your friends. And I'm concerned. And then you would help them talk about what it is that they're going through. If you do notice these signs, you would at some point in the conversation want to say, I am worried about you. Have you had thoughts about killing yourself? Have you ever considered suicide? Those are hard words to really get through if you haven't done that before. So you would probably want to practice that actually, even before you go into that situation.
Educate yourself. You know, feel prepared for the conversation before you go into it. There's great information on how to understand the signs and symptoms of mental illness, the signs and symptoms of suicide, and tips on having those conversations. So there's trainings like Question, Persuade, Refer that are available throughout Ohio. Mental Health First Aid is available throughout Ohio. And really, all of us can access those trainings and prepare ourselves for those conversations. And once we feel prepared, have the conversation. Don't shy back. If we saw that somebody had a limb that wasn't working properly, we'd certainly ask them, hey, are you okay? Do you need anything? How can I help? And the same should be true if we recognize that a person is angry or irritable in a way that we're not used to seeing them, or not engaged in activities in life the way that we're used to seeing them. We should be asking that question, and we should feel like it's okay.
The research shows that talking about suicide actually has the opposite effect. It actually seems to reduce the risk of dying by suicide. Think about it this way, a pressure cooker. You know, if you take the lid off of a pressure cooker, it takes the pressure off. And so that's what we're doing when we talk about suicide with someone who's experiencing those thoughts. Believe me, they're already experiencing them, and they feel alone in that. They feel like no one will get it, or people will think they're odd or bizarre or weak or immoral. So by talking about it, we're giving them a voice. We're giving them a place to be able to let go of that pressure. And it actually gives them hope that if somebody can understand me, maybe there's hope that I can get better.
The most important thing that I've learned about life when it comes to mental illness is just that it's okay to not be okay, and it's okay to ask for help. Because a lot of the things that I've done in my life, I would not have been able to do without asking someone for help. And especially when it comes to the mental illness, I mean, in 2015, I was 17 years old. I was young. So like dealing with that, if I would have tried to deal with it by myself, I don't see how that would have worked out for me, or if I would have been where I am today.
So anyone that wants connected to local resources, there are lots of ways to achieve that. One way that we've made possible right now is by calling the Ohio Care Line, and that number is 1-800-720-9616. And we've designed that number where when you call, you talk to a person who's interested in what you want to talk about, will help answer your questions, and link you to local resources. And not just tell you numbers to call, but can actually help call and make that transfer to those resources in real time. And so I'd really encourage people to go there. On our website, which is mha.ohio.gov, we have a treatment finder. So if you don't want to talk to someone, you can go to this website, click on the treatment finder, and put in your zip code, what kind of services you think you're interested in, some other characteristics, as much or as little as you want. And it will give you a map of resources in your local area that you can call and investigate and research on your own. So there's plenty of ways to do that. The local alcohol, drug, and mental health boards or recovery boards are also great resources in local communities. They have lots of information and they coordinate the network of many publicly funded behavioral health providers across the state. And so they're a good resource as well.
The truth is, if a person is still alive, if they're still talking to you, there exists this concept we call ambivalence. And that is this push-pull inside of them between a desire to end their pain by ending their lives and a desire to stay alive. So in every person that's in your office, they're on the phone with you, they're in your room, they're in your home, if they're still there, that ambivalence exists. And that's something that anybody can capitalize on.
Never feel too proud to ask for help. Never feel like you got to do things alone. You definitely don't. Like AJ said, if you don't have friends or family that you feel that you can depend on, there you would be surprised the amount of strangers that are willing to help you and or listen to your problems. There are suicide prevention, like hotlines. You'd be surprised the amount of like effort people will put into people that they have no idea about. Like they have no idea who they are. They have no idea what they've been through, but they're willing to listen and they're willing to be there. And it's important to take advantage of those resources. But yeah, number one thing is just, I feel, don't be too proud to ask for help. I mean, life is already short. I mean, there's no need to make it shorter. There's always something like to look forward to. And I mean, I understand that there are really things like there are really hard times and there are times where it may seem like this will never end. But if you keep pushing, you can make life what you want it to be.